Good morning, friends. Let's take a moment and pray for illumination before we read our scriptures. Lord, open our hearts and minds by the power of your Holy Spirit, that as the scriptures are read and your word is proclaimed, we may hear with joy what you have for us today. Amen. Our reading this morning is from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. You can find it on page 862 of your pew Bible. Hear God's word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory and the glory of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he whom I said, 'He comes after me, yet ranks ahead of me, because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." This has been the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Jim, for that prayer and reading. So here we are on Father's Day. So if you are a father or a grandfather, would you please stand up so we can all acknowledge you? And in doing that, we're acknowledging the legacy of your families. And we'll get into father stuff as we go along here, because there's some father language in this passage. So we come to the beginning now of John's Gospel. Last week we took a look at the invitation to come and see, and what we're going to do every week now is respond to that invitation. And we're going to see something different about the person of Jesus every Sunday as we gather here for worship. Now, the opening pieces of words of any piece of literature are really important for determining where the writing is going and how it will be received and how it will be understood. We read the opening paragraph of a novel differently than the way we read the byline in a news post, don't we? But we need to know where things are going. So think about what happens in the Gospels. So the Gospel writer Matthew begins with a genealogy of Jesus, because for his Jewish audience, the lineage of Messiah running through Abraham and David is really important. For Mark, we start with action. Jesus is like the Energizer Bunny in Mark's gospel. The word immediately shows up 40 times. Jesus finishes one conversation or one miracle, and he runs off to the next one. And Mark wants us to catch up with this Jesus who's working to set the world right. Now, Luke's gospel is really interesting. It looks like Luke's gospel starts at a family reunion. And you know what happens at family reunions. People tell stories about the previous generations. The first chapter of Luke's gospel is 80 verses, and it's not really that much about Jesus. There's a little bit, but most of it's about relatives, Elizabeth and Zechariah. Somebody seems to pull Luke aside and said, you got to include them in the story. Make sure that that's there. But the clue that's being given to us in that is, for Luke, relationships are really important. But when we get to John's gospel, we don't start with the details of Jesus' life. We don't start with his ministry. John opens the book by asserting that Jesus is divine, fully God, and that he's human. Incarnation. God taking on human form, coming to us in the flesh. Like God, Jesus was not created. Jesus is the creator. And as a complete surprise to all of John's audience, John declares that Jesus as creator has taken on human form. Now, the moment we hear that statement, immediately the question comes to our minds that certainly had to come to the minds of everyone who were receiving John's gospel. How can Jesus be both God and human? Well, that's the great question that John invites us to discover the answer to by coming and seeing Jesus every way. Now, John's introduction, as Jim has read, is a little bit like trying to drink from a fire hose. There is so much coming at us as we try to answer this big question. And John's going to use this term in Greek. It's the term logos. It's translated as word in English multiple times. So let's watch now as John tries to answer the big question by clarifying how it is that Jesus can be both fully God and fully human. Well, John begins with three words, in the beginning. And as soon as John uses that phrase, John is summoning from the recesses of his audience's memory the first words of the Bible. Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning, the same phrase, God created the heavens and the earth. The story in Genesis 1 is very straightforward. The creation comes into existence by means of God's speech, God's word. 10 times in Genesis 1, God said, God said, God said. And then at the end of each day of creation, and it was so, and it was so, and it was so. There's something about the power of the divine word to bring creation into existence and for it to function as God intends. So John says, in the beginning was the word. This logos, this word, John tells us, is with God, but not only is with God, but is God. And then John says, this one, referring to the word, the logos, he personalizes this. Logos isn't an idea. Word isn't just a form of speech. It's a person. He was with God in the beginning. Marianne Mai Thompson, a member of this congregation, says that in this statement, in the first two verses of John chapter 1, that the word is both with God and is God, that constitutes the heart of John's Christology. In other words, we're at the bedrock of how John is going to form his gospel. When we built a home in Colorado Springs, we had to pay very special attention to the foundation. John's paying very special attention to the foundation here. The word is with God, and the word is God. That's the foundation for John's gospel. Now, so what that means, if we respond to the invitation to come and see, is this. If we want to know who God is, if we want to see what God is like, then we have to pay attention to the one who is the Word. And then John continues by picking up other elements of the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. In verses 3 to 5, John says, everything that exists comes into being through the creative activity of the Word. And then John goes on and says, as the Creator, the Word is the source of life and the source of light. And then John says, for all people, for everyone, for all people. John says it twice. Now, Ashley, this was not rehearsed, this was not coordinated, already reminded us of that in the children's sermon this morning. In the promise that God makes to Abraham, your descendants will be like the sand on the seashore. God has always intended to bless all of humanity, not just any one particular people. Light and life for all humanity. Now, the word life shows up 45 times in John's gospel. The word light shows up 21 times. These are two of John's central images that we must pay attention to as we go through the gospel over the summer. God says, let there be light, and there's light. And then the next statement in the Genesis narrative, John's also going to pick up on. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. For John, in verse 5 of his gospel, this light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not, difficult word to paraphrase, did not overcome the light, or we could say couldn't extinguish the light, or couldn't put it out. For John, physical darkness is an image of what is happening spiritually on the face of the earth. Physical darkness portrays everything that opposes God's life and God's light. Now, here's what we know when we look at our situation today. When we see all the present darkness in this world, it makes sense why people despair, doesn't it? Why some suffer with depression, why some withdraw from others. How can we handle all the complexities of life? It's hard to find any glimmer of life and light in bleak times. Years ago, my son and his wife were at our house for dinner one evening. It was late autumn, near Thanksgiving, and a windstorm came up, and suddenly the power went out. And there was silence around the table. And then my two grandchildren, Klein and Max, immediately started shouting out, Mommy, Daddy, where are you? I can't see you. Well, Shonda, my daughter-in-law, grabbed Klein and put her in her arms, and Brandon, my son, grabbed Max and held him in his arms, and they just started to say, be still. Be still. It's going to be quiet. And then they started to say, watch what's going to happen in the next few moments. Well, what happened was the eyes of our grandchildren, like our eyes, adjusted to the dimness of the darkness. And within moments, they discovered that even in the dark, they could navigate all over our house. They still knew where the stairs were to get upstairs. They knew where the toys were. Eyesight readjusted in the middle of the darkness. That's what John is trying to do in this gospel, to readjust our eyesight so that we can see Jesus' life and Jesus' light in the midst of the darkness of our world. Now, John knows all about that darkness in the harsh, cruel world of the first century ruled by the ruthless Roman Empire. John is not trying to ignore in any way the evil of his world, nor can we do that. But he is a witness to the reality that that darkness will never extinguish the light of the Word. This week in a staff meeting, Ashley brought up the Sesame Street character Elmo. Remember Elmo, if you've seen Sesame Street? Well, that got my mind thinking about not Elmo, but somebody else in Sesame Street, Oscar the Grouch. Those of you who know Sesame Street, you know all about Oscar the Grouch. He lives in a trash can, and nobody likes Oscar, right? And every time he gets into the trash, someone puts a lid on that garbage can, and they think, oh, we're done with him now. We don't have to deal with Oscar anymore. He's never going to come back. But if you've seen the show, you know that Oscar always pops out of the trash can. He keeps coming back. No one can put a lid on Oscar. That's what John is saying in verse 5 of his gospel. No matter how much the evil of the world tries to extinguish the light of Jesus, it will never happen. Come and see what that looks like. Readjust your sight. So here's what we've seen in the first 5 verses by way of summary as the Word is declared to be divine. Let's take a look just at the summary here. Go ahead and pull that slide up. Come and see the Word who is with God and who is God. Keep going. Who is the Creator, who is the source of all life and all light. And this powerful conclusion, darkness never extinguishes God's life light. That's what John wants to assert in these first 5 verses. It's not just about some theoretical idea about God, but it's about helping us understand that God, in the midst of our darkness, will always be present. Do not despair. Now, next week, in the next section of this passage that Jim read, we come to John the Baptist, and next week, Josiah is going to preach from John 1 on John the Baptist. So we're going to skip over the Baptist. We're going to come back to it next week with Josiah. And now we turn to John's second big idea. The Word became human. Now, John doesn't refer to Jesus specifically in this passage, but it's very clear from what we're about to hear that everything that he's going to write in verses 14 to 18 is about Jesus. So now John's second big idea, the Word became human, verses 14 to 18. Verse 14 of John's gospel is perhaps one of the most significant statements in all of the scriptures. The Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen. Come and see, that's the invitation. Now John's starting to reorient our sight. Here's what we're going to see if we come and see. We have seen God's glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and full of truth. Now when John says we have seen, it's not a verb that's simply talking about physical sight. The way John frames verse 14, we have experienced, we have lived through, we have gone through this with Jesus, and now I'm going to give you testimony of what we saw. And this is what John has seen. First of all, theme 1, the disciples experienced the Word made flesh. Who is Jesus? The theological term incarnation means that the Word became flesh, a person with bones and muscles and sinews, with eyes and ears, noses, mouths, just like any of us. He lived on the earth and he interacted with common folk who were just doing the best they could to get by. Lived in Galilee among farmers, fishermen, carpenters. He lived with everyday people. That's where John began to experience the Word became flesh, in the ordinary experiences of life. The second theme that John says, the Word showed up and lived among us. The image that John uses here comes from the Greek verb skenao, which means to dwell or to camp or to tent with. So now here comes another image from the beginning of the Bible story that John's pulling forward. After Israel escaped from Egyptian captivity, God literally tented with them or camped with them for 40 years. They had with them the tent of meeting. It was the place to remind them that God was with them in the wilderness for a whole generation. So as Jesus camped or tented with them as God tented with them for 40 years in the wilderness, so Jesus now moves into the neighborhood of Galilee. And for 3 years, he lives there and travels back and forth, according to John's gospel, from Galilee to Jerusalem multiple times. And every day, John says, we experience this Word made flesh. Jesus walked with us. Jesus ate with us. Jesus became weary with us. We were all together at the end of every day wondering where we were going to lay our heads. That's how we experience the Word made flesh. Years ago, right after my wife Suzette and I got married, we were involved in a mountaineering program in the Colorado Rockies. And we were responsible to lead groups of high schoolers up into the wilderness. And on one trip, we were on the Continental Divide. There was a snowfield there, and we were sliding down the snowfield. And as we were sliding down, the tip of my boot caught some ice that was buried underneath the snow, and I twisted my knee badly. And we were 3 days away from the trailhead. What was I to do? Well, one of the other guides, Howard Parker, came along and said, "Don't worry, we're going to get you all the way home." And so Howard took everything out of my pack. He distributed among everybody else who was on that trip, put a splint on my leg, put my climbing harness on, and for 3 days, every step, there was Howard lifting up the left side of my body, helping me to walk. Now, in order to do that, he had to be so close I could feel the breath, his breath on my neck. His sweat, he was working so hard to help me, was dripping on my neck. That's the experience I had with Howard Parker for 3 days. John experienced Jesus for 3 years. As we walked, Howard would say, "Tell me about Suzette. How'd you meet her? What do you like about her? What do you want your life to be going forward?" We had the greatest conversations as he was sweating and breathing all over me. And we became really close. That's what John's saying. That's what we experience with Jesus day in and day out. Word became flesh, and we camped together. The third theme that John raises here is that as they experienced the Word made flesh in Jesus, they started to experience God's glory. Now here comes another part of the old story from Genesis and Exodus. As the people traveled through the wilderness, as God was tenting with them, at Mount Sinai, God's glory appeared up on the mountain. Clouds and fire, thunder and lightning, the blast of a trumpet. And when we read in Exodus chapter 19, this absolutely terrified the people. They're asking Moses, "Get us away from this God who seems to want to destroy us," with the power of God's glory revealed on the mountain. But that's not how God's glory comes in John's gospel. Stories John tells us about Jesus reveal God as God really is. So what did John observe? What do we see when we start to come to these stories? We see Jesus humbly serving others. We hear him courageously teaching truth. We see him setting the creation right through his miracles. We see him washing the feet of the disciples. We see him beaten and bloodied, hanging upon the cross. There's no glory akin to what happened on Mount Sinai. But this is the way in which God reveals who God really is. Nothing in Israel's history had prepared the disciples for these astonishing, humble revelation of God's glory. Jesus, God in human form. Another theme that John identifies in verse 14, this person, when Jesus came, was full of grace. Now, sometimes that grace comes disguised. We're going to see as we deal with some of the sign stories, the miracle stories, that Jesus will make things right. And afterwards, the people who've been blessed by Jesus' grace don't even know who he is. What's that about? How does that work? Grace often, John tells us, comes disguised. Good friend of mine, Jerry Sitzer, has written a book called The Grace Disguised, which he recounts the struggle that he went through after he lost his mother, his wife, and his daughter in a car accident. The title of that book is A Grace Disguised. Jerry had to confront this question. Why me? Why did this happen to me? And this is what he writes. Gifts of grace come to all of us, but we must be ready and see and be willing to receive those gifts. It will require a kind of sacrifice, the sacrifice of believing that however painful our losses, life can still be good. Good in a different way than before, but nevertheless good. And then Jerry gets really honest. Oh, I have lost, but I have also gained. I lost the world I loved, but I gained a deeper awareness of grace. That grace has enabled me to clarify my purpose in life and rediscover the wonder of the present moment. So as we journey through John's gospel this summer, let's see how the grace comes to all those people that John writes about, disguised in the form of God in human form, Jesus. We'll look at some of these miracle stories in the weeks to come. And then John says in verse 16, we heard it in the reading, we all live off of God's abundance, gift after gift after gift, grace after grace after grace. All of life is a gift. All of life is grace. Finally, John says, the disciples also experienced God's truth. Another one of John's favorite terms, 43 times in John's gospel, we're going to hear this word. In John's gospel, there are 7 long conversations that Jesus is going to have with a variety of people. Individuals like Nicodemus and a Samaritan woman, sometimes with large groups of people after he's fed the 5,000. Even with enemies, those who have already decided that they must destroy Jesus. Now, why would Jesus enter into a conversation about truth with those who have already decided that they're going to murder him? That's part of what we're going to see as the grace and truth revealed in John's gospel. But in these conversations, truth is not an intellectual idea. For John, truth is primarily about Jesus' identity. He is God. And about the mission of Jesus, who's come as Messiah. Identity and mission. That's what Jesus' truth is all about. And later on in the gospel, we're going to hear Jesus actually claim, "I am the truth." For Jesus' truth is relational and it's personal. Fully God and fully human. So there's what we've seen. When Jesus takes on human form, he is God in the flesh, who camped with us, who tented with us, who reveals God's glory. Jesus as the source of all grace and all truth. So the gospel writers consistently show us that if we want to know who God is, we must look at Jesus. And on this Father's Day when I woke up, I thought about my oldest son, Keats. I thought about how much his fourth grade son, Clark, looks like him. Like father, like son. Look at this verse as our final conclusion. Go ahead and call up that next slide. This is the paraphrase of John 1:18. This one-of-a-kind God expression who exists at the very heart of the Father has made God plain as day. We want to know what God looks like? We need to look at Jesus. Fully God and fully human.